The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
A source telling CNN that Attorney General Pam Bondi has directed federal prosecutors to launch a grand jury investigation into accusations that Obama officials manufactured intelligence about Russia's 2016 election interference.
Crime. I mean, we've heard terms like seditious conspiracy and treason. I'm not seeing anything close to that. And finally,
stunning, terrifying, and a waste of time. But we never tried to criminally prosecute anybody. And so this doesn't make a lot of sense. But just because you feel badly about something or you don't like something the last administration did doesn't mean somebody should go to prison. And if that happens, that's a completely different world that we're living in.
You look at the timeline here about what happened and when it happened. Barack Obama had nothing to do with this by anybody's accounts.
These are unsubstantiated and largely debunked allegations by the Trump administration that former President Barack Obama and his aides in the intelligence community ordered a probe into the 2016 Trump campaign's connections to Russia to ruin his chances of becoming president.
You know, these are authoritarian tactics. This is incredibly dangerous. This is authoritarianism. These are sort of secret prosecutions. And so this is completely unorthodox, I would say unprecedented for the modern American Justice Department since Nixon. And it's very disturbing at the very least.
Is there ever like a public resolution of this story?
No, because Israel's controlling our government. So no, the answer is no. Trump is powerless against him. We haven't had, I don't think we've been a sovereign nation since they shot JFK. And when I say they, it's like people online say, what do you mean by they? I'm talking about Israel. I don't want you guys to read in between. I'm talking about Israel. So let's stop making that a taboo subject because they've gone mask down. Everything they're doing is demonic. I want nothing to do with it. I will never support Israel into the future after what they've done to these children. The starvation campaign. I don't care. Please write your article. You've already written them all. I don't know what you could add about me. But I do not support Israel. And I don't think that Jewish Americans should support Israel. And I hope that they're now having those conversations. I see many of them recognizing that they have been propagandized into believing they have to support this demonic state.
The Israeli Security Cabinet meeting today after Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu reportedly approved a plan to occupy the Gaza Strip.
A source telling a prominent Israeli journalist, quote, Hamas will not release hostages without total surrender. If we do not operate now, the hostages will die of starvation and Gaza will stay under Hamas control. The mandate for a deal was broad, but we did not get agreement, so we will go for occupation.
The Prime Minister of Israel represents the country and the future of the country. Look, I would not want to be in the shoes of the Prime Minister of Israel and the choices that he needs to make for the future of the people of Israel. We don't want to see what happened on October 7th happen again.
And in comparing the numbers from June to May, we did see the trade deficit shrink about 16% down to $60 billion from the month prior. So we've seen those trade numbers continue to go down as they have tried to see the trade field level between multiple other countries. We're still waiting for the official White House reaction to this trade data that came out about 15 minutes ago. We're also looking to see how the markets may react to it. But the trade deficit shrinking from June compared to the month of May, down 16% down to $60 billion.
And I remember one of my favorite lines is after April 2nd, right? I go home and remember the market was all a tizzy. And I got all these phone calls from my Wall Street buddies and they were going crazy. They're like, you don't know what you're doing. You're going to destroy the market. You're going to destroy this and that. And they were all blowing up the internet. They all are experts. And let me tell you who the experts are. Donald Trump and his trade team have proven the EU pays, Japan pays, Korea pays, Vietnam pays, the Philippines pay. They all, Indonesia pays.
Japan has opened up. All of these, Indonesia's opened up their country. South Korea has opened up their country. But not only opened up, and that's going to be huge business. When you open up South Korea, it's a closed country. And now all of a sudden we're allowed to sell cars into South Korea and trucks and SUVs. I mean, we're really opening it up. Vietnam is opening up their country. You know, these are all closed countries. But the EU was closed. They wouldn't take our agriculture, and now they take all our cars, all our trucks. Everything is open, 100%. In addition, the EU is going to pay us $650 billion. We're going to round it off, actually, because of certain things, to $600 billion. And think of it. They're going to put up $750 billion. We're a rich country again. Now, these are just deals that I'm announcing. These are the biggest ones because EU is, you know, essentially Europe. We made great deals with all of the countries.
As the world turns, so many storylines, and we're going to try our best to get to as many of them here today on The Trumpet Daily. You're listening to The Trumpet Daily. This is Stephen Fleury, and if you'd like to spread the news about where you can get the live video stream of this show, you can go to TrumpetDaily.com or the Rumble channel, rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. So yesterday we talked about the two big hoaxes that have been in the news so much of late, the Russia hoax, and then the starvation or Gaza hoax, whatever you want to call it. The hoax that says Israel is the enemy, Israel is the villain, and the poor people of Gaza are the victims, of genocide. And we've been talking a lot on that this week, and we'll get to a follow-up on that later on today's show. But I just want to talk about the Russia hoax here for a second. As you saw at the beginning of the cold open, I mean, people are panicking. The regime media is panicking. They're sweating bullets. Because news just out today, I mean, all through this, whether there was, you know, you hear about Pam Bondi arranging for the grand jury and so on, and it's kind of mysterious. Who are they going to go after? Is it Comey? You know, is it Brennan? Could it be Obama? We'll get to all of that as we proceed. But through all of this, you know, this program has been looking at the prospects of, you know, getting any kind of a conviction in a D.C. court as being next to impossible. But then John Solomon comes out today and he's talking about how that the court proceeding could be in Florida. So what do you think Brennan and Comey and company are doing at the moment at the prospect of going into a courtroom in Florida, a red state, to answer for their crimes? I mean, we've said all along in America Under Attack, not just that Obama would be that he'd be silenced, not just that Donald Trump would return, but that the evil of these traitors would be fully exposed. And it remains to be seen just how many of them will be held to account for it. But it certainly is being exposed, as now every commentator, at least on the conservative right, is acknowledging. I mean, it's so obvious. And you see the regime media there still trying to cover for these criminals. These traitors, guilty of treason, as Tulsi Gabbard said from the start of the release of these documents, the declassification of these documents. Treason for years. We've connected this or pointed out the parallel with spiritual Israel and the attack coming from an Antiochus, a religious figure that so many of us are well aware of. You can read about the story in Raising the Ruins. I've been reading that of late, just getting ready for Fundamentals of Theology class this year as we go through Mystery of the Ages. And of course, Raising the Ruins describes the court battle, the fight for Mystery of the Ages that went on for 6 years from 1997 to 2003. And then this book comes out in 2006 and gives you the inside look at all of this corruption. I mean, we knew coming into the 1990s because of Bible prophecy, because of what my father wrote in Malachi's message, we knew we were witnessing a great rebellion, a great revolt against the truth of God, against the laws of God, against what Herbert Armstrong taught. It's all laid out for us in Malachi's message, even as it was happening, even before much of it happened. But then this book, 2006, it comes out many years later, and relying on a lot of discovery from the lawsuit, I mean, you get an inside look at all of these traitors and the scheming, the conniving, the lawlessness, the evil. It was fully exposed. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 5, speaks of that lawless rebellion. It says, "Remember you not that when I was yet with you, I told you these things. And now you know what withholds that he might be revealed in his time. The mystery of iniquity, the mystery of sin, the mystery of lawlessness does already work. I mean, it's working behind the scenes. And as soon as God removed Herbert Armstrong, then it was fully exposed and revealed as the lawless, corrupt movement that it was and is. It continues even to this day. The mystery of iniquity does already work. Only he who now lets will let until he be taken out of the way. God took Herbert Armstrong out of the way. I don't have time to read the entirety of this chapter, but it says later that he did it to test our love for the truth. He even sent strong delusion to see if we could discern, you know, right from wrong, good from evil, to see how much we love the truth of God. Verse 8 says, and then shall that wicked be revealed. Wicked with a capital W. Satan was behind this lawless rebellion. And God fully exposed it, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. That Obama conspiracy that we've seen in this nation, I mean, it's very much like the mystery of iniquity that we saw in the church, God's church, in the late 1980s and the early 1990s. And we went through the lawsuit, 6 years of it. We ended up with Mystery of the Ages and all these other works that Herbert Armstrong produced over the course of his 55-year ministry. But we didn't receive justice from the court system. There's so much lawlessness and corruption there, so you don't want to get your hopes too high, even if it's in Florida. But God did, in the end, reveal the corruption, the insurrection, the coup that was happening inside his church. God did reveal it, at the very least, to see all of these talking heads sweating bullets. I mean, there is some satisfaction in that, because for years, this next montage we're going to play, I think we produced this a year and a half, 2 years ago, and we got quite a lot of retweets from it. This morning, Sam noticed that there was a Twitter account or an X account that has 3.8 million followers, and they tweeted this out. This is a Trump. You can see it in the upper right corner of the montage. It's a Trumpet Daily original, and this takes you back to the early years of Donald Trump's first term. And listen to these rabid dogs as they're just salivating at the thought of Donald Trump going to jail. God, of Donald Trump being destroyed, the walls, as they say, over and again, closing in. This is clip 8.
The walls feel like they are closing in.
But as the walls close in around the president,
Donald Trump feels the walls closing in.
I think this is a guy who feels like the walls are closing in.
The walls are closing in on him.
Because the walls are closing in.
The walls are closing in on the president.
Now the walls appear to be closing in.
Really kind of the walls closing in on him.
The walls are closing in because the walls are indeed closing in.
I think at this point the walls are spinning.
The legal walls are closing in.
The walls are closing in on President Trump.
The walls, meanwhile, are closing in on the president of the United States.
The walls closing in on President Donald Trump.
It appears that the walls are closing in on this president.
Feels that the walls are closing in on him.
The walls closing in on him.
And the walls are closing in.
And the walls are closing in.
That the walls are closing in on the president.
Are the walls closing in?
The walls are closing in on the presidency.
It says as the walls begin to close around him.
Is the political walls closing in on him?
This is a president that feels the walls closing in.
The walls are closing in on Donald Trump.
I think the walls are finally closing in.
The walls.
The walls.
The walls.
The walls.
The walls.
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 And the walls.
The walls.
The walls.
The walls.
Walls
are closing.
Closing in.
Closing.
Closing in.
Closing in.
Closing in on.
It's closing in.
The walls
are closing in on President Donald Trump.
He's not looking forward to any of it. He's horrified. He's just talking big. The walls are closing in, as has been said before.
Wall-to-wall coverage for walls, walls, walls. I think my favorite is, I think now the walls are spinning. I'm not even sure what that means, but in any event, what about the other guy? The walls are closing in because indeed, the walls are closing in. They were hyperventilating. They were so excited about Donald Trump's demise. Well, look who's horrified now. Now it seems like the walls might be closing in on Comey and Brennan and Obama. God said that it would happen. You got to hand it to, as I've said before, Tulsi Gabbard and Donald Trump for a time, for a week or two. It seemed like those were the only two that wanted to pursue justice. Now, I mean, we'll see what happens with the grand jury and whether or not it actually is in Florida. This is from Chuck Grassley. He's the one that wanted that annex declassified, and he got his wish, and this is what he said following that the other day, clip 10.
So John Brennan and James Clapper tried to get ahead of this story because they've got an op-ed already today in the New York Times. The headline reads, "Let's set the record straight on Russia in 2016.
Well, you see, you're bringing attention to the burn bag to me for the first time, and I'll leave that up to the FBI to describe, but I think it's evidence of the great depth that the deep state will go to cover up weaponization that was going on in the FBI and the executive branch of government generally under the Obama administration.
Sir, is there a smoking gun in this?
Well, I think the smoking gun kind of dovetails in with things that Tulsi Gabbard has put out in the recent 2 weeks and things that we had with the Crossfire Hurricane Annex that I released a couple weeks ago. Kind of all dovetails into the same thing, but it gets back to the fact that whether you have a Republican or Democrat administration, that there's cover up we shouldn't have it. Transparency or the public's business ought to be public, and what the FBI does ought to be public as long as their investigations are done. Or if they aren't investigating, if they aren't doing their job, then it should be exposed, and this Durham Annex exposes that.
Now, it's interesting, the points made in America Under Attack, and we've brought this out before. Sundance was the one who talked about how that this was a two-pronged effort, this treasonous coup. First, it was to get Trump, of course, and when that failed last November, I mean, then everything's over and said and done, and, you know, the radical left moves on and tries to regroup. But the second, this is all important. The second reason they had all of these illegal investigations and such going on, and the Mueller investigation and so on, it wasn't just to get Trump. It was also to cover their illegal tracks, all their illegal behavior and their criminality. And that now is being exposed, and it may be that they can't just walk away from it like they did from the Get Trump operation. Not that they've stopped that necessarily, but they're out of power. I mean, look at these Democrats scurrying off to Illinois, the most gerrymandered state in the union, and they're screaming at the thought of Texas Republicans wanting to redistrict some of the... You look at the district, by the way, from Austin to San Antonio, this little tiny strip that just picks up all of these radical leftists in Texas. And really what the Texas Republicans, and there's plenty of rhinos in the mix, by the way, but what those Texas Republicans are doing is they're just fixing it to where it's reasonable. But you look at Illinois, you look at California, I mean, they all draw up districts that favor Democrats. I think someone said that there were something like 40% of the vote in California at the last election that was Republican. 40%, that's not a majority, but it's 40%. And so how many seats in California are Republican? 17%. So, and Gavin Newsom's threatening to gerrymander more because of Texas. I mean, both sides do it. And Texas is being urged to do this because of President Trump. And then the heads of the regime media, they just explode. Let's hope that Governor Abbott follows through on going after those Democrats that just broke the law and left. They left the state. They just won't participate in what they've been elected to do. And so they turned tail and ran. It's, as I say, the tables have definitely turned. And you see who's running now. Who's running scared now? to see some Republicans finally showing some backbone, finally showing some fight, showing some rising lion courage. We'll check back later on the follow-through and see if they really go all the way. But in this covering up their criminal behavior, my father says the second goal is the one most people have overlooked, but it is most important. It's most important, you see. Obama and Comey and Brennan, they had to not just go after Trump illegally. They had to cover their sinful tracks, so to speak. Listen to John Solomon. This is the one I mentioned earlier, from earlier today, clip 17.
This is a major development. We told you last week that Pam Bondi, the attorney general, had given permission for a strike force to begin. That's a very specific tool the Justice Department uses on major conspiracies. And we told you then we would know it was getting serious when the grand jury jumped into action. We now know that a grand jury will be impaneled. Most likely, my sources are telling me, it could be in Florida, where the raid of President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home happens.
Wow. So the Mar-a-Lago raid down in Florida, that may come back to haunt these treasonous actors, these coup leaders, the insurrectionists. I'm sure Bondi and company have been searching for ways to get it outside of D.C. I mean, look at what the radical left did with the lawfare against Trump. I mean, they tried to get lawsuits established in New York or Manhattan in D.C., because they knew this would be where they could get Trump easily. And now you got the other side saying, hey, let's get it down to Florida. And by the way, I mean, looking at it long term, how do you solve this kind of division, this kind of political warfare? I mean, it's the early stages, really, of civil, or rather a civil war. But leaving that aside, as to how far God takes this to hold them to account, we'll see. We know that the resurgence is, I mean, Sundance, for his part, is saying Obama seems like he's, the language was worded just carefully enough back in 2016, 17, and so on, that it may protect the dear leader. But we'll see. I mean, there's others that say, no, I mean, this is conspiracy. This is a cover-up, and it's ongoing, and the statute of limitations doesn't apply here. We'll see what comes of it. But meanwhile, I mean, President Trump, at least with respect to the economy, I mean, he's claiming victories. He fired the woman that rigs the statistics on jobs. I think that was last week. And then you hear these reports today on the trade deficit that was in the cold open there, and how that gap is shrinking, largely because of the tariff policies and the trade deals that President Trump is working. Speaking of Trump, he has to be the most accessible president. You look at the previous administrations, whether it's Biden, I mean, with even Obama, when he'd come out for the occasional presser, I mean, the ones that asked questions, they were pre-approved ahead of time. And then with Joe Biden, it was even worse, because they were trying to cover the dementia. And then Trump comes along. And today he's outside on top of the White House, being the real estate tycoon that he is. And reporters are screaming at him, and he's yelling back, saying, well, I'm just looking for ways to spend money on the country that will benefit the country. And then a little while later, he's playing peekaboo around a pillar, talking to the reporters once again. Yeah, what do you guys want? Play this clip. This is 18.
Will you let those Ukrainians who fled the war to stay in the United States until the war ends in Ukraine?
I think we will, yeah.
You will?
I think we will. We have a lot of people that came in from Ukraine, and we're working with them.
President Trump is on the roof of the White House. He's taking questions, or he was just a few moments ago. Let's listen in, please.
Looking good, Peter.
Checking the remodeling from the roof of the White House, and then talking. I haven't even looked into this, how much of it's being funded by himself or out of his own pocket, and how much is being funded by taxpayers. But as you know. I mean, he doesn't take a presidential salary. Well, this is when is the last time a U.S. president has fielded questions from the White House rooftop? This is amazing what we're seeing. It's every day. The activity is dizzying, the pace that the man keeps. It doesn't mean he's hitting a home run, but he's, I mean, with every policy, I mean. But he's saying just enough to back Bibi Netanyahu, although with the announcement yesterday that they're going to go in and occupy Gaza. I mean, that's a bold, audacious move on the part of Netanyahu. I can't imagine there's too many people in the Trump administration that are happy about that, but that's the only way. Look, I mean, as I said the other day, I mean, Hamas is taunting Israel. And, well, Bibi's responding. Okay, if you're going to starve our hostages to death, then we'll just come back in. After a 20-year absence, we'll take over. And they had, that's what's so sad about this. They had control in 2005. But they just left. They left it behind. What a courageous and bold step this would be, though. I mean, Gadi Taub, we've been playing the clips. He said it over and again that the only hope to recover those hostages and to stop Hamas, to eliminate Hamas, is to get control. To get control of the Strip. And before that, it looks like Bibi's going to have to get control of his government. And here again, another victory today. Or maybe it was yesterday, the Israeli government voted to remove the attorney general who operates on Get Bibi. That's what she's trying to do. This tyrannical judge who thinks she's shielded from the public opinion, from a democratic vote. They've been going after Bibi for decades. And, of course, he's going against a divided IDF as well. A lot of them are sold on the two-state solution. The Oslo Accords, they want to have two states side by side. Well, on October 6, 2023, they had that. They had the Palestinian-controlled or Hamas-controlled Gaza Strip side by side with Israel or southern Israel. And what happened on October 7? The Times of Israel says, Prime Minister Netanyahu reportedly told ministers this week that he will seek cabinet backing for a plan to fully occupy the Gaza Strip, despite objections from within the Israeli Defense Forces. I mean, the army's not on board with this. I mean, that's unbelievable when you think of it. You see how far-reaching the radical leftist infiltration is in Israel's government, even in the military. We know it's in the media. Gadi Taub has said, I mean, Israel, the Israeli media, the left-wing media is leading the way promoting this hoax that Israel's carrying out genocide. Talk about self-hate. According to reports in the Hebrew media, several ministers said Netanyahu used the term occupation of the Strip in private conversations describing his vision for the expansion of military operations in Gaza, a notable shift in tone as the government prepares to discuss the future of the Gaza campaign. If you look at what Bibi says in his autobiography about Gaza and some of that history, here again, we're coming up to the 20-year anniversary of Sharon's government going into Gaza and forcibly removing Jews from every square inch of Gaza, handing it over to the Palestinian people, saying, hey, here you go, let's have democratic elections, you choose your government, and the Palestinians in Gaza chose Hamas. We can't forget that. I mean, that's not like ancient history. That's 20 years ago. I'm old enough to remember the images coming out of Gaza, them taking the Israelis out forcibly, as I say. If you want to skip ahead to that clip, this is number 13, the IDF back in 2005 in Gaza, the Gaza Strip, clip 13. That, just so we're clear on this, that's the state of Israel, the Jewish state, forcibly removing or cleansing Gaza of all Jews. And here are the charges from Candace Owens or whoever else it is, saying that Israel's cleansing the Gaza Strip of Palestinians. No, actually, you've got it backwards. The absolute 100% cleansing in Gaza happened 20 years ago, and it was a Jewish cleansing. They got the Jews out because that's what Hamas demanded, to have its own government, to have full autonomy. You got to get rid of the Jews. And look at where we are today, 20 years on. Churchill said, I mean, this Gaza hoax today, you think back on what Churchill said about this policy of appeasement, or in the case of Judah's wound, exchanging land for peace. It's really exchanging land. They exchanged land right there in 2005. And what did they get? War. Judah's wound is actually land for war. And it's so easy to look at it in a very short-term way and say, well, if we just give them what they want, surely they'll love us. Surely they can live peacefully alongside of us. I mean, listen, there's October 7, of course, but from 2005 to 2025, you've got rocket fire from Gaza, you've got abductions, kidnappings, murder. And it culminated in October 7, and Israel finally a rising lion had to rise up and say, that's enough. That's enough. We've been weakened to the point of near death. This is the worst Jewish massacre since the Holocaust. Sadly, this is what it took for Israel to finally act, to go on the offensive, to show some force, to demonstrate some courage. That Churchill quote I mentioned, you are given the choice between war and dishonor. I mean, they chose dishonor, a shameful display. And you see these Jews that had lived in Gaza, in some cases, for their whole lives, leaving their kibbutzim because they had to. And then Israel going in and demolishing some of those residents, or at least some that they couldn't just hand over to the Palestinians. Others the Palestinians took control of, and then they destroyed them in their own way. A shameful display of weakness, dishonor. You've been given the choice between war and dishonor. You choose dishonor, and you will have war. That's what Israel chose. Now, as the latest Trumpet magazine brings out, there are a lot of spiritual lessons that we can take away from Israel's rising lion. I mean, we've got to show courage spiritually in God's family, in God's church, in spiritual Israel. But that said, I mean, you still see curses setting in particular for Judah. Judah's wound, as it says in Hosea 5 and verse 13, that wound, as we said in the 1990s, is the so-called peace process. You choose peace in a dishonorable way, and you're actually choosing war. And now we have the benefit of hindsight. 20 years on, as I said the other day, what a teaching moment this would be if you had people with a sound mind rise up and say, I mean, Bibi does talk about this in his autobiography. He resigned from Sharon's government because of this complete surrender in Gaza. I don't know if I have time to get to the quotes from his autobiography. But if you just look at some of this history, even going back before 2005, when Hamas was established in 1987, on their charter it says, the day of judgment will not come about until Muslims fight the Jews, killing the Jews, when the Jew will hide behind stones and trees. This is like Hamas's founding document. This is like their constitution. I mean, when they're hiding behind the trees, these Jews, the trees will speak up and say, hey, here's a Jew, come kill this Jew. Can you imagine a mindset that would put that into its foundational document for a nation? complete autonomy, independence in 2005. And this is what it was based on. And then you look at the fruits from 2005 to 2025. What have been the fruits? Just a few days ago, Hamas releases this video. You saw it yesterday on the show. This poor Jewish victim, emaciated, starving to death, digging his own grave. I haven't seen enough of that even on conservative media. I'm surprised. I flipped around the channels last night. And, you know, the huge story, these Texas Democrats that are fleeing the scene. What a victory this could be for Donald Trump. He could gain 5 seats in the House of Representatives. I mean, it is a victory in a sense for Donald Trump. I guess it's not complete yet. But still, look at the world we're living in. 1987, Hamas is established. And then the next year, a guy named Yahya Sinwar, remember that name, Sinwar, he is put in charge of the Hamas wing that hunts down Palestinians who are disloyal, who are suspected of being in contact with Israel. They're collaborating with the enemy. So Sinwar's job is to go after them. And boy, he did it. He did it pretty well. He murdered 4 Palestinians because he thought they were collaborating with the Jews. Along the way, he picked up the nickname, the Butcher of Khan Yunis, which is a city in Gaza. The Butcher of, well, insert your hometown. I mean, they're proud of people like this that have this kind of legacy. Sinwar, by the way, it's skyrocketing in baby name popularity in Britain, of all places. How about that? Yeah, I mean, he's famous for killing Jews. And so the Muslims in the UK, they love to name their babies Sinwar. What a world. Ever since the establishment of Hamas, an even more violent and virulent offshoot of Muslim Brotherhood, the suicide bombings began, the bus bombings in the 1990s, the second Intifada after the first one in the 80s, that was in 2000 to 2005. And then Hamas started firing rockets into Israel in 2001, I think it was, the same year as 9/11. It's a long history of hatred and violence and attacking Jews. Sinwar was put in prison for killing those 4 Palestinians. And he bragged about it. Yeah, I killed him with my own hands. And while he was in prison, he met up with this guy. His name is somewhere, Dr. Bitten. He's a Jewish dentist that worked in the prison. And they struck up somewhat of a friendship. At least they had quite a lot of dialogue. And it was about 2004, 2005 that Sinwar came down with brain cancer. And Dr. Bitten noticed it. This Jew, this Israeli. And he said, hey, we need to attend to this guy. He's about to die. They take him off to a local Israeli hospital. He's diagnosed with brain cancer. They perform surgery. And these Israeli doctors save his life. They save Sinwar's life, the murderer. That's pretty amazing. September 2005. August, September, that's the Land for Peace deal, if you want to call it that. That footage you just saw there, extracting every last Jew out of Gaza, handing it over to the Palestinians. And then in 2006, under pressure primarily from George W. Bush and America, the Palestinians in Gaza, they had a democratic election. Well, this is going to turn out great. We're just spreading democracy. And as it turns out, they elected Hamas, and they had to enter into a joint government with Fatah. But in 2007, the next year, Hamas just said, you know what? We're taking over. We don't want to be allied with Fatah. They're not extreme enough. They're not radical enough. So in 2007, you saw Hamas this military conquest of Gaza. No more democracy. No more elections. They just forcibly took over. This is from an educational video online. Play clip 14.
Meanwhile, the Hamas and Fatah unity government was unraveling with a year and a half of bloody internal clashes. The violence culminated in June 2007 when Hamas infamously threw Fatah members off rooftops and carried out a complete military takeover of Gaza. Since June 15, 2007, Hamas has controlled every aspect of government and life in Gaza, and there have been no elections since. Hamas quickly ran Gaza into the ground, maintaining armed resistance against Israel as its top priority, while neglecting the basic needs of the Gazans they were now completely responsible for. Hamas raised taxes on Gaza's businesses, imposed fees on smuggled goods, received about $100 million annually from Iran, and diverted billions of dollars of international aid, all to finance building rockets, drones, and a 500-kilometer-long web of underground tunnels to hide and operate in. The Hamas leadership became billionaires as the majority of Gazans struggled in poverty.
Complete military takeover in 2007. And if you back up a year, this would have been a year after Israel withdrew. Hamas orchestrated, well, they punctured the boundary there, the fence between Gaza and Israel, and went in and ambushed this Israeli patrol, killed two soldiers, kidnapped Gilad Shalit, took him back to the Hamas tunnels. Sound familiar? That was in 2006, the year after Israel gave him every square inch. Now you fast forward to 2011. Gilad Shalit, Gilad, I don't know how you pronounce that, but he had been in captivity for 5 years. And you had a lot of bleeding heart liberals in Israel crying out for Bibi, yes, Netanyahu, to get the hostage back. And, well, they got him back. They traded 1,027 Palestinian prisoners, one of which was Sinwar, the brain cancer guy, the mastermind that went after all of those so-called Palestinian collaborators with Israel. They gave Sinwar back. So if you think about the history for that man, here he is, this murderer, cold-blooded murderer. He gets four life sentences. He goes off to an Israeli jail. He gets brain cancer. Israel saves his physical life. And then a few years later, he's handed over to Hamas. Here you go. And Hamas gave one Israeli hostage to Israel. And, of course, that was the first of many infamous prisoner swaps. 1,027 for one Israeli hostage. Hamas kidnapped some Israeli teens in 2014. Well, the conflict continue. But just getting back to Sinwar, listen to what he said. So he's released in 2011, and listen to what he says. I think it's in subtitles, but he said this in 2018, clip 15. We will take down the border. This was in 2018, just 5 years before October 7. We're going to take down the border and tear out their hearts. Tear out the heart. The Israelis saved this man's life. And here he is talking about, I mean, you talk about a prophecy. This guy was the mastermind of October 7, if you can believe it. The mastermind behind the October 7 massacre. Israel saved the butcher of Khan Yunis, saved his life. He was serving four life sentences. But Israel saved his physical life and then traded him, along with 1,026 others, for Gilad Shalit. And that led up to the deadliest day for Jews since the Holocaust. That led up to October 7. This is clip 16.
On October 7th, 2023, thousands of Hamas terrorists broke through the border and invaded Israel, massacring over 1,200 Israelis, most of them civilians, while simultaneously firing thousands of rockets all across Israel. Hamas took hostage about 240 children, women, men, elderly civilians, and foreign nationals.
ومش هذا حتكون طوفان الأقصى أول مرة. لا حتكون تاني وثالث ورابعة لأن إحنا لدينا إصرار ولدينا قرار ولدينا إمكانيات.
Since October 7th, Hamas and Israel have been at war, with Hamas hiding behind the civilians of Gaza at every opportunity, including by operating inside hospitals, wearing civilian clothes while actively fighting, and physically preventing Gazan civilians from evacuating war zones.
And now that's been effectively scrubbed from the internet, even though Hamas tried to promote it. I mean, they were out there spreading the videos. They just sent the world a video of a starving Jewish prisoner. They're proud of it. And yet Candace Owens says it's Israel that's the demonic state. She actually called Israel a demonic state. And there's Tucker, you know, that's interesting. What is wrong with these people, these commentators? A lot of mental derangement, a lot of peace derangement syndrome, very little sound-mindedness. You know, you look at the Spirit of God. It's the Spirit of sound-mindedness. 2 Timothy 1, 6 and 7. But then look at 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 5, and you see what is so pervasive today. It's the Spirit of high-mindedness, the Spirit of vanity, the Spirit of pride. I mean, just look at 20 years of history, or go back to 1987. You know, look at almost 40 years of history. Look at the Hamas charter established in the late 1980s. And then look at the trail of destruction that they've left in their path as they carry out this mission to kill Jews. We've got to do it. They hide behind rocks. They hide behind trees. The trees and the rocks, they'll speak to us. You know, that's even eerily prophetic in a satanic, deranged kind of way, because there were looters on October 7 that were following the terrorists and looking through cars and houses for anything, pots and pans to take back with them to Gaza. And guess what many of them did if they came upon a Jew? Well, they went outside the house and they started hollering for a terrorist to come on in and kill the Jew. Hey, I saw another Jew right here, a civilian Jew, baby, mother, didn't matter. Which state is demonic? I mean, no state is perfect, and we all have our sins. But we have witnessed demonic violence. Israel wasn't doing anything on October 7. It wasn't doing enough in terms of securing its border either. But they didn't start this latest round of the war with Hamas. It's been ongoing. Firing rockets, kidnapping teenagers, murdering soldiers, kidnapping Shalit, trading him for Sinwar. Sinwar, the mastermind of October 7. And then you can sit back and sound so sophisticated saying it's Israel. That's the Israel is the demonic state. That's demonic reasoning. I'm sorry. Listen to Mark Levin. This was the... This was the rant that we didn't have time to play on the show yesterday, clip 12.
A lot of hate is swirling around, a lot of disinformation. A lot of people are coming out of the closet. A lot of people are taking off their hoods and their masks, and they're revealing themselves. On October 7, 2023, the slaughter of the Jews by Hamas, that didn't happen because the Palestinians were not given a state. It happened because they were given a state. Hamas slaughtered Israelis in ways that are so monstrous, so horrific, that not a single network or cable TV platform will show you the videos that terrorists took while decapitating, gang raping, mutilating, burning alive, and slaughtering innocent young people at a music festival and innocent families at kibbutzim, basically farmers. I ask France, Germany, Britain, Spain, Ireland, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, Finland, Iceland, and the rest of them who are now calling for a Palestinian state. Why won't you show your citizens what was done on October 7th? Why? Hamas executes, tortures, starves, and brutalizes the Palestinians in Gaza. Why don't you show what Hamas is actually doing?
Why are you knowingly and intentionally covering up for Hamas? Why aren't you reporting how they use their hospitals and mosques and schools and homes and other civilian locations as military installations from which to attack Israel, to store ammunition and arms as terrorist communication centers? Why are you censoring this information? Why are you knowingly and intentionally feeding lies to your citizens about Hamas, which is working hand in hand with the United Nations, UNRWA, is starving the people in Gaza the way Stalin starved his people to hold on to power, the way Mao starved his people to hold on to his power, the way Assad killed 600,000 of his own people, all Muslims, to hold on to power, the way in Yemen, Muslims are slaughtering Muslims, 250,000 of them. Why don't you report about that? Two-state solution won't fix any of that. The evidence is everywhere of what Hamas is doing in videos, in photographs, in-person accounts, and so forth. Hamas is controlling the food distribution in Gaza by stealing it, consuming it, and when it has enough left over, selling what it chooses to whom it chooses.
He's right. He's right. That's grounded in history. It's grounded in the facts on the ground. There's an article at Commentary about Hamas propaganda, the fog of war. It says the events of this past week have highlighted once again the power of the anti-Israel hoax, a claim intending to prove something about Israeli policy is revealed to be false, but not before it mobilizes concerted global action against the Jewish state and is then defended on the grounds of truthiness, the belief that something is true because of pre-existing biases, even when it is directly contradicted by the facts. Doesn't matter. Just get out there with your bias. Wax eloquent. Dress up in a nice suit. It says those of us who live in reality have seen the same thing happen over and over again. The wholehearted embrace by the American media of hoax war porn has changed the landscape significantly. Listen to this reaction to that bit from Candace Owens. This is on CBN News, clip 7.
So Candace has been kind of on this anti-Israel, even anti-Semitic journey, if you will, publicly since around the fall of 2022. And so it has just escalated seemingly year after year. Virtually everything that she said in there is either a lie or a distortion. But she doesn't mind doing it. And Israel being a demonic state and all this other type, these are unhinged things that we hear from people like the Ayatollah, who calls Israel, the Ayatollah of Iran, as you know, calls Israel a cancer that needs to be removed from the earth. Candace is sounding like a jihadist. This is exactly what it's sounding like.
You know, one of the...
She sounds a lot like the jihadists. It's sad, but true. And we talked about the mind change in Tucker the other day as well. This commentary article says, our journalists once were truth tellers, at least some of the time. And it talks about the fog of war during Churchill's day and how that there were those out there saying, no, we can make peace. The guy yesterday that tweeted, if Tucker would have been around in the 30s, I mean, war wouldn't have broke out because of a podcast, an interview with some of these tyrants. Churchill's great gift to civilization was not just that he rallied good against evil, but also that he pierced a suffocating fog of self-deception by speaking truth to lies. That's what we need more of today. And Bibi's giving us a fair bit of it, but people hate Bibi. We need someone who pierces through the suffocating fog. Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free." This is in the same chapter where he says, you know, the devil is the father of lies and murder. Only the truth will set you free. I have more, but that's all that we have time for on today's show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.